back to another week of Behind the Lens. I'm Debbie Elias, film critic, creator, and host of Behind the Lens, where we go behind the lens and below the line with the movers and shakers, the film and TV and streaming makers, all those producers, directors, writers, actors, cinematographers, production designers, costume designers, film editors, sounds editors, mixers, designers, the VFX gurus, composers, stuntmen and women, and so many more. And you all know how much I love film, how much I like to talk. So when I get to talk about movies, you know, it's a joy. It's what I love doing more than anything, I think. Because I love giving you the front seat of as to how the sausage is being made, the who, what, where, when, why, and how of movie making with these interviews. Now, you heard me talk about it. You know about it. It's finally here. It's Shark Week 2026. And who doesn't love Shark Week? I know I do. What started as a programming experiment on July 17, 1988 on the Discovery Channel, Shark Week has blossomed into one of the most anticipated viewing celebrations of the year. Now, this year's Shark Week delivers 20 jaw-dropping blockbuster premieres across every night. It started last night at 8 o'clock on Discovery Channel. And it's packed with pulse-pounding action, epic breaches, and high-stakes encounters. Featuring pioneering technology, groundbreaking investigations, and unbelievable stunts from divers and sharks alike. Each special dives into the mysterious worlds of these apex predators, bringing audiences closer to their raw power and untamed nature like never before. Now, thanks to the popularity of Shark Week, National Geographic hopped into the viewing shark cage with their own celebration, Shark Fest, which is now in its 14th year, with documentary programming on the National Geographic Channel as well as on Disney Plus and Hulu. Those are running all during the month of July. And there are some really cool informational documentaries that Nat Geo has this month. Now, ever since Peter Benchley's 1974 best-selling novel and Spielberg's subsequent release of the movie Jaws in 1975, the fascination with and celebration of sharks has taken the world by storm. And while Shark Week and Shark Fest honor the scientific and informative aspects of sharks on the small screen every July, and let's face it, a lot of fun, too. Did you know that there have been over 400 shark-themed movies produced worldwide since cinema began, be it for theater or home video streaming release? Personally, I think that number is a bit low, because let's face it, people love sharks. Now, in honor of this special time of year, and although there are several new shark-themed films currently out and or releasing this week, today I'm talking about one sharktastic movie, Above and Below, with director Jesse V. Johnson. Now, you already know Jesse's work, thanks to films like Chief of Station, Thieves Highway, both with Aaron Eckhart, the Debt Collector films, and Hell Hath No Fury. But now, with Above and Below, this former stuntman-turned-director has never been afraid to push bodies, cameras, stunt teams, and himself to their limits. But thanks to Anthony Giordano's screenplay for Above and Below, Jesse was presented with something altogether different. Water. Lots and lots of water. And sharks. More significantly, it gave him a group of young protagonists far removed from the weathered, world-weary characters with whom Jesse generally gravitates. And dare I say up front that Above and Below is simply, let's hear it, shark-tastic. A basic premise: but one that has tension reigning supreme above the water and danger lurking below, in above and below. During a Mexican shark dive, five friends are ambushed after discovering cartel cocaine. And let me just point out, it may be a Mexican shark dive, but this was shot off the coast of the Canary Islands. Hello. Trapped in a shark cage. Two of our protagonists, Tatiana and Kaylee, are forced by the cartel to retrieve a bag of drugs on the seafloor because somebody jumped overboard with one. Uh-oh. Now, battling legendary great white sharks with dwindling air and armed killers, the survivors mount a brutal fight to outsmart their captors and escape. Now, directed by Jesse Johnson, with script by Anthony Giordano, Above and Below stars Antonio Banderas. And he does look lovely, sweating under the sun on the open sea air. I just have to say. Laura Morano, Louis Mandalore, who I will see in anything. Jess Liaudin, who, this is my first introduction to Jess, and I will be on the lookout for him from here on out. Timothy V. Murphy, Christina Ochoa, Doncha Tynan, Ryan Bertrage, and Diego Linus. While the team behind the lens includes one of my fave cinematographers, Maxime Alexander, and editor Matthew Lawrence, and composer Maria Vertiz. Now, in this interview, Jesse and I get in the shark cage and cover all things above and below, from Maxime's beautiful lensing, and how he uses the blues of underwater to create negative space and give us depth of field. So from Maxime's lensing to Matthew's rapier editing that sadly sacrificed some sharks and left them on the cutting room floor, to Maria's score and the musical challenges you face so as not to fall prey and imitate John Williams' unforgettable Jaws composition. And then there's the casting, with some real surprises, courtesy of Laura Morano and Jess Liaudin, and not to be missed, laugh-out-loud funny anecdotes about Louis Mandalore, sharks, and a corpse. Tough guy, Louis Mandalore. You aren't going to believe these anecdotes as you hear Jesse regale me with them. Plus, there's another great endorsement for New Boyana Studios in Sofia, Bulgaria. And this time it's from Jess. Jesse, you've heard how many directors I've spoken with over the years since New Boyana opened up, talk about how wonderful it is working with New Boyana and the people and the stunt people and the production teams there. And you hear it again in this interview, in spades. Now, it's a fun interview. It's insightful as to the filmmaking process for Above and Below. And it's revealing into Jesse's work as a filmmaker and his mindset and considerations as to projects and the decisions he makes. I was fascinated to hear what he had to say and entertained at the same time when we're talking about Louis Mandalore and a fear of sharks. Who knew? So take a listen as director Jesse V. Johnson talks about Above and Below.
Hey, Debbie. How's it going?
It's going. Is this the wonderful Jesse?
How's things? Yes, it is. It is. This is me.
I have to say, I'm thrilled to get to speak with you about Above and Below. I am such a huge admirer of your work as it is.
You, Debbie, I'll talk about it with you.
Chief of Station is just fantastic, but, you know, even going back to Hell Hath No Fury, Thieves Highway, it's just, I love what you bring to the screen, and I love the fact that you always incorporate your stunt world roots come through in your films, and I love that.
And thank you so much.
It comes through here and Above and Below, which I'll tell you up front, it is, there's only one word for it, shark-tastic. It is, it's fantastic, Jesse.
Thank you very much.
It was really lovely to see you in such a wide open space, under the water and above the water. It's limitless. And you really take advantage of that. You bring in Maxime as your cinematographer, and it's just brilliant. The visuals are brilliant. They're beautiful.
Well, the choice to hire Maxime was embedded, not only because I'd worked with him on the TV show in Europe. I did a show called The Pendragon Cycle, which is now number one, I guess. But he had shot a film earlier in his career called Crawl about an alligator in flooded Louisiana. And I remember seeing that at theater and actually having to take my feet off the floor because, you know, it became so nerve-wracking. You know, with I thought that the alligator was going to go under the cinema seat. But it was so well handled that I thought he'd be perfect for this. And we talked an awful lot about how to incorporate a diver, a stunt diver, with a motor swimming around, so that the actors have something to respond to. Because obviously, you know, acting is about reacting, and you don't want a bunch of people, you know, trying to react to an orange ball floating through the water, or you know. So we had this stunt diver who became the shark in the movie, and it really, really worked very well. It was a great suggestion of Maxime's. He's also a diver, so he was able to spend 10 hours a day in the water for 2 weeks in Sofia. You know, we shot in a tank there, which is 30 meters deep, you know.
It's a bargain. You get Maxime, it's a bargain, because since he can also be in the water and can dive.
It is.
But no, I mean, I love what he did with Crawl. I can't tell you how many times I have watched that, Jesse, and you do so get that creepy, crawly reaction about get your feet up off the floor.
Yeah. You know, I like it in a genre, because I'm not, you know, I don't follow genres. I follow good movies, and I follow directors. You know,
yeah.
I've been upset. I've collected works and books on different directors. I don't think of motion pictures in terms of genres. I know that is how they exist. I know that's how most people do. But the truth of the matter is you try and make a film as good as you possibly can, with characters that are interesting and motivating and well acted, and dialogue that's electric and feels, you know, like it's being said for the first time, not after it's been rehearsed and sort of learned, you know. And you want people, you know, if the film is a thriller, you want them to feel a sense of jeopardy for the actors that are in danger, and that they care whether they get eaten or not. And a lot of the shark films I looked at in study for this one, I really rather hoped that all of the humans were going to get eaten by about halfway through. They were so sort of poorly drawn. So I tried very hard with this one to make the characters interesting, so that you would feel for them and you feel, you know, you the sense of danger. And I think that's the big key to making this particular kind of film work, any kind of film, actually.
Welcome to my world, Jesse, because I actually have a running list with every film of characters. It's like, why aren't they eaten yet? I want them gone now. I have a list.
Right.
Who should be eaten? Who should be the entree? Who should be the appetizer? Who should be the dessert? And who should survive? Maxime does such a wonderful job with character. And you mentioned something, because the benefit of him diving, you know, in an orange ball, people would have to look at an orange ball. It's like, I know he did something similar above ground with the charming film Earth to Echo, about little aliens that, you know, come to Earth with these bunch of kids, find them. Beautiful job. And interesting with that film is he really uses blues to give texture and depth of field to the screen. And he does that here with Above and Below. When you talk about negative space, most people think black. It's just black is negative space. No. And this film, Above and Below, is a perfect example of negative space that is not black. The blues that we have, the underwater blues, have so much depth of field to them, Jesse. It is fantastic. You don't know what's coming out of there. It looks pretty, and then all of a sudden, here's some teeth in front of your face. But the blue, the use of blues as negative space is just, I was enthralled watching that. Just enthralled.
Wonderful. I love to hear that. No, he's great to work with. He's a great collaborator. I work from a shot list, which is, you know, I do the night before, and it's, you know, it's my battle plan for the day. And I can move quite quickly, especially when I'm backed into a corner. And we had a lot of that on this because of the time we're working on. And I said, look, this is how we'll shoot this, you know, to get out of Dodge, you know. And he'd look at my shot list and he'd go, that's a good idea. But how about I do something slightly different? And first it was a bit jarring. And I'm like, okay, well, let's see what you got in mind. And then consistently his ideas were better than mine. So there came a point where I simply began trusting him immensely. He's just very, very good. It was great to work with him. It was a lovely experience.
Heard the same thing. Johannes Roberts has said the same thing about him. I mean, he's worked with him. He did Resident Evil Raccoon City. And, of course, Johannes did the great underwater shark movie 47 Meters Down, which is chilling with
right.
two girls.
That's what I watched live. I think I liked that one. I didn't like the sequel to it.
No, and Johannes didn't do the sequel. But no, one of the big things that he was concerned about in doing 47 Meters Down was getting the debris within the water right. Now, it was a different area of water than where your film is shooting, you know, outside the Canary Islands. It's beautiful, it's blue, it's gorgeous, it's clear. But that was one of Johannes's big things with 47 Meters Down was debris. He needed debris in the water because of the area that they were shooting in and where it was set. It would not be pretty clean water. I'm tickled that you got to show off some nice looking water. I mean, now, when you got, what was it about this script, Anthony's script, that really spoke to you and said, I got to make this, because we're not used to seeing your films in the water.
No. I got this script. I was in Columbus, Georgia, on location doing Thieves Highway. And I don't normally read a script when I'm on location. I'm very, very loyal to the one script. I might read a book that's set in the same time, and you know, if I'm doing a Western, I might read something by Zane Grey or something like that, or, you know, Louis L'Amour that has maybe a little bit of dialogue that I might be able to immerse in that particular patois. But I read this script, and I didn't think it was anything that I had any business doing. And then it took about 3 days to realize over the course of the weekend, rethinking it, that I was scared of doing it. I was scared of doing a film that was underwater. I was scared of doing a film that had young protagonists. I usually deal with men who mm-hmm. live their life, you know, bringing all the baggage that comes with having lived their life to their role. And I realized you have to go sometimes where you're scared to do anything interesting, to move anywhere with your life. You have to venture out of your comfort zone now and then. And it was very, very much out of my comfort zone. But what I did see was the opportunity to create some very interesting characters with the antagonists to work on them. They, in the script, they were written as 19-year-olds, you know, young drug dealers. And I didn't think that was the best way to do it. So I thought, I'll keep the young kids as the leads. But I think if I can bring in some really seasoned kind of bad guys who really add some layers to these characters and do something interesting with them, this could be something that I find a worth in. I find, you know, because I have to be interested for 8 months of pre-production and development, for the whole 6 week of the shoot. I've got to be absolutely passionate about it, and then my passion has to remain intact for the following year and a half of post that goes on. So, and that comes from making, you know, characters that are truly interesting to me. And so By the 3 day weekend, by the end of it, I was like, you know what, I think I should do this. I absolutely should, you know, sign on to do this film and see what happens, you know, where it goes. And I'm very glad I did. I really enjoyed the process and I really enjoyed working on these characters. There's a protocol for, you know, wild animal movies that, you know, there's a lot of them out there. You've got to be careful of copying that. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be completely personal about it. I watched 60 or so of those and realized what did and what didn't work. And then I put that aside and said, it's just, you know, I went to, you know, two or three different underwater marine museums and marine tanks and talked to different specialists in that field about sharks and how they work and how they act and how they hunt and what their characters are like. And it was fascinating. I got more out of that than I did out of watching the movies, to be honest. I really watched the movies and kind of forgot it. The one thing I took out of the movies was that when it really didn't work, when the films didn't work, was when you didn't have any interest in the characters, because you would be, as I said earlier, you would be rooting for the shark by about, 10 minutes into the film. Please just eat these people and let's get on with it.
That's right.
That was the main thing I took away from watching the films. But for the most part, I tried to base these guys on what I learned from people that actually knew sharks.
Well, I have to say, I love your thought process on switching up the antagonist. And instead of having them young morons, who we know are going to screw up anything they're doing, you bring in these older guys. I got to tell you, stand out for me out of the entire film is casting Jess Loudon as Garrison. I am so in love with that character.
Oh, fantastic.
Garrison is, he's rock solid. You know there's more to him than what we're seeing. He's not just a hitman or a muscle-bound errand boy for Burns. He's very observant. He's very taciturn. And I love how Maxime always manages to capture looks on his face as he's observing. All it takes is like a glance, lift of an eyebrow, and you really wonder what's going on with Garrison, and you question, is he really working for Burns? Is he an undercover guy? He keeps you guessing, and I love that character. My favorite character in the film, besides the shark.
Oh, wonderful. I love to hear that, Debbie. I'll have to let Jess know. He worked very hard on this, It was fun for those guys. Each one of them phoned me and said, I don't have a psycho scene. I don't get to kill anyone. I don't get to shoot a machine gun or do a martial arts scene. I said, no, it's not that kind of movie, guys. This is a different one. There'll be different challenges. And they loved it. I thought they really stepped up the plate. I loved working with Tim Murphy again.
Oh, Tim Murphy is wonderful as Captain Logan. Wonderful.
Rather special, and Lewis, of course, I love working with. The highlight was working with Antonio Banderas, of whom I'm a huge fan and have been, wanting to work with for a long, long time, and he just didn't disappoint. He was so extraordinary to watch and to collaborate with, and so kind and understanding. He knew that everyone was nervous. He knew that the actors are nervous to play a scene with him, and one of his great skills is making people feel at ease, making them feel comfortable, which is quite a feat when you think about who it is you're sharing the screen with, 2 feet away. And he did it so well. Everyone was in love with him, and it was great. And I think he just was the film would not have been possible had he come with any kind of attitude. And a mean thing, most actors have, a self-protective attitude. But he was so good, Debbie. He was an amazing experience.
The character of Burns, he brings so much to it. I mean, we've seen him have a crazy edge to some of his characters before, like in Expendables, the franchise. He has a crazy edge sometimes, but here, the way he can turn on a dime and be flippant and then be deadly serious and then stare down with such a stare that it's like you're ready to jump overboard to the shark instead of facing off with Burns. Just wonderful. And then you give us, Lewis is just, I'll see anything that Lewis is in. But we've never seen him this insane. As Martin, he is beyond insane. And to see, he's almost like a younger version of Burns. You think that Burns might have been that much of a loose cannon in his younger days. But he's also a great counter to what Jess brings is Garrison. These are the three best bad guys, the best bad guy triumvirate I have seen in a long time. I love your casting there and the character development of them.
Thank you very much. I'm very impressed also with Laura Morano. I thought what she did was extraordinary. Very difficult role. And as I was mentioning earlier on in another interview, the role was quite different. By about midway through, I realized we could throw a lot at this young woman and she would take it and work with it and come back at you. The sheer experience she's had since, starting work as a professional on a TV show at 6 years old or seven or something ridiculous like that. He knows as much as most, you know, experienced producers know, not to mention, you know, actors who've been at the, you know, holding, supporting a TV show for that many years. It's it was really, really quite exciting working with her and watching how she would handle certain scenes. You know, the gun scene at the end, you know, that was a pistol. And she trained for, you know, in the hotel room. She'd never touched a gun in her life. So she trained with a pistol in the hotel room, you know, an airsoft replica that she then, you know, we taught her, you know, with a technical instructor how to use. And she trained and trained and trained. And then, of course, when we shot the scene, we realized that the guy that was carrying the pistol she was supposed to use, and actually he dived the wrong direction, so he ended up being about 40 feet away. There was no way that her character could have reached to that gun and used it on Antonio. It was a complete, I was like, oh, God. And he was supposed to, you know, and none of us had noticed because that had been shot, whatever it was, 2 weeks earlier. So I, you know, I looked around and realized the guy had dived behind her with the submachine gun on top of it, and she had to reach back and cut that and use that. I said, Laura, you're going to have to do it with the submachine gun. And she said, I don't even know what that is. Where do you hold it? What do you do with it? And I said, you're going to have to learn very, very quickly. We have a stuntman who's a tactical instructor. Go back to the front of the ship. He's going to take you through how it works. And, of course, within 10 minutes, she came back, and she's holding it like a SEAL team operator.
Wow.
You know, it's how to use it, how to exchange magazines on it, where to aim on it. And we played that scene, and I think I had to do it. It was the most takes we did of anything. I think we did about 20 takes of it. And I just kept adding dialogue to it because it was one line. And until what you see in the movie, I think, was around take 15. And by that point, it's about four times the length of what was written in the script because it just really worked. That gives you an idea of what it was like working with Laura. You threw more in there because you realized she could handle
it. She could do it.
Swimming. As I mentioned, all the guys had the paddy test, which was 3 days. In the classroom, 2 days in the ocean, and then they had to go the following week and do an additional 2 days qualification for the full, you know, the full face mask. So during that time, they also learned. And my guess as a you know, older guy was that the guys were going to be, you know, the sort of Taipeis and the girls that have to sort of, you know, would be hesitant going underwater. It was complete opposite. Laura was the one that was down at 30 meters before anyone else. And the guy, you know, the guys were nervous and their ears were popping and they were complaining and upset. And she had to encourage them to go in and go deep, you know. And I was watching that because I wanted to see how they worked as a group dynamic. it was interesting. It was, and, you know, she'd never done anything more than scuba diving, you know, with snorkel diving, I mean, you know.
She was fearless underwater. She was fearless. And that's one of the things that I really appreciate about her performance and the character, because we see a complete character arc, complete shift. You know, she starts out drunk and partying, but we start to see very quickly she is the one, the common sense, the one who has intelligence, the one who is hesitant about things because she wants to think them through, because thanks to her brother, she has seen what recklessness can do.
Yes.
So I love how that character develops, and I just love her performance. And underwater, she really, really shines. Very impressive. And to be down there 30 meters. But, you know,
and I think that, you know, you're asking people that haven't, you know, scuba dived before, 2 weeks ago, to go into water to 30 meters and to do performance for 8 hours of a day, you know, it's extraordinarily claustrophobic, and your ears are popping and self-regulating, and, you know, it's really quite a lot, and it's amazing how gung-ho this cast were. I'm so lucky with them all, so I'm glad you noticed that. Thank you.
I'm not surprised that Ryan, who plays Danny, I'm not surprised that he was gung-ho. I mean, he survived Taylor Sheridan in 1923, so if you can survive Taylor, diving with a shark is nothing. But yeah,
he didn't like scuba diving, Debbie. He was not a big fan of it. He was one of the ones that Laura had to you know, champion and cheerlead to get him to go back again, because he was having trouble with one ear, and you know, it's a tricky thing, you know. It's not for everyone. But by the end of it, he was doing it, but it took Laura kind of, you know, come on, you you can do it this way. So it was fascinating to watch. It was the opposite to what I had expected. I'd expected him to be the...
That's what I would think. Having seen what he did cowboying in 1923, I would have expected him to be all gung-ho. It's like, bring it on. I'll go down 50 meters.
Exactly. They were by the end of it. They were by the end of it. Everyone was tremendous. The funnily enough, the most difficult scenes were the death scenes, and both Ryan and Donica had those. You know, Ryan's one, he's obviously seated with a weight harness around him,
mm-hmm.
and we had to, you know, which meant that you had to take the oxygen out of their mouth, and the diver had to swim away. You had to wait for the bubbles to clear, and only then could the shot start. So, you know, they had to hold their breath, they had to oxygenate, they couldn't move, there couldn't be any bubbles coming out of their nose, and then. Donica's one was the hardest because he was upside down, inverted, and supposed to be holding weight in the bag, and his face, you know, had to be, you know, it was nerve-wracking for these guys, you know, it was not, you know, and I think we raised the platform to about 15 meters for those shots because mm-hmm. they were too deep. It was, you know, the light wasn't good enough. And they were really gung-ho. It's not a small thing to ask of a person. And they didn't want to do those. It's like, I'll show you, we'll do it, you can do it. It's straightforward, oxygenate, I'll let you go down, try it out, we'll take it really slowly, and when you're really comfortable, we'll put the camera on, you know. And it was interesting. But they all did it, they all stepped up to the line, and we got what we needed for the movie. But it's nerve-wracking to do this kind of thing. It was a challenge. It was more of a challenge than I'd expected, and I expected it to be a challenge.
The death scene, TJ's death scene, upside down, that just amazed me, and I kept looking at it, and it's like, no, it's not a dummy. That is him. That is him. It is not a dummy. It amazed me. Amazed me. I hope he puts that on his resume and in his reel. I can play an upside down dead person 30 meters underwater.
Yeah.
It just, and the way that Maxime shot it is just beautiful. And the way you have it framed and with, you know, the rocks and the crags around it, really nicely set up.
We worked so hard on that because you're trying to imbue the scene with as much emotion and drama and pathos as you possibly can. And there's so much practical stuff and safety stuff you're thinking about, and ultimately it's a young woman looking at, you know, her ex boyfriend who's died, and you need all of those mixed emotions, and it comes out of the eyes, and, you know, do we have it, and the music, of course, and the way that Maxime shot it. So I really, really appreciate you pointing those out. It was hard work, but you know, that's our business, isn't it?
And you know, the beauty is what Maxime also does a beautiful job, and you mentioned the eyes. And shooting through face masks, we still get raw emotion that he's capturing through face masks, which is very impressive and is very hard to shoot because, you know, depending on the mask.
I think my direction for a lot of the water stuff with the kids was, tilt your head back, we can't see your eyes. And before kids would do these great performances and danger and in and out of the cage. And I say, and you know, I have to speak through a speaker, which is underwater. It projects my voice very loudly, so everyone underwater can hear it. It's not very intimate at all. And I have to say, we have to do it another time, guys. I'm so sorry. Tilt your head up because we need to see your eyes in the light, because the mask would put their eyes in the shade. And I've done this long enough to know that you've got to see the actor's eyes.
Yeah.
Ultimately, telling stories over a fireplace, and the storyteller, you look into his eyes, and that's the story. And with actors, you need to see their eyes when you're telling us, you know, a movie, you know. And this bloody mask was, you know, we don't have lighting underwater. There's very limited lighting underwater. There's a little bit on the camera sometimes. So that was the majority of a lot of my directing was tilt your head back. So I appreciate you noticing that.
And I also noticed the eye line. When a shark finally does appear, we have an eye line. There is a direct eye line. Maxime captures that beautifully. It's not like the actor's looking over here and, oh, here comes the... They're looking stage left and the shark is coming stage right. The eye line is lined up beautifully.
Now that was a big thing that Maxime brought to us. I said, what was it that made, you know, Crawl work so well? you know, because there's a lot of these different things like fake sharks and rubber things and amazing special effects, but they don't move underwater very well. They're inanimate for the most part. He said that the simplest and the smartest way is to have a stunt diver with a jetpack, you know, that he's holding, and that becomes the shark. That becomes the malevolent monster, you know, in his case, alligator, that the actors react to, that they watch, that they see, that will be light from. If it casts a shadow, that shadow is the shadow of the stunt diver, and we'll work with it. And that was the best advice imaginable, because at any point in this movie, the actors are reacting to something in the water that's moving, circling them. And he was good. He was quite scary. He had to hold his breath so no bubbles came out, because, you know, removing bubbles is really difficult. And he played the shark for the entire movie. And then in scenes where they're being dragged and jerked, and which there was a lot of, you know, we had a huge stunt diver who was, you know, ex-world Bulgarian champion. I mean, this guy is big, like a giant. And he had a big shepherd's hook, a green hook, and he pulled or poked or snatched the actors. And, I mean, he dragged them around, really dragged them around. And then we had tow teams on Lewis, you know, when they're being towed by the shark. We have six guys outside of the water pulling him on a line. So, I mean, there was a lot of rigging that had to be done to create an environment where the actors can actually react and look like they were reacting to the real thing, which was super important for me. You know, I didn't want it to feel fake. I didn't want it to feel manufactured. You know, I've got to look scared. It's easy to feel scared when there's an object coming at you. You know, even if it's just a stuntman, it's much easier to pretend that that's a shark, you know.
Now, obviously, you were definitely shooting on open water for the catamaran scenes and everybody on the boat and the great action sequences that take place on the boat, which there again, it's very tricky because you don't have that much room to navigate and to stage your stunts and to shoot them.
We had the whole crew and cast on the boat. So we had about 11 crew members. It's like a documentary. We were off the southern coast of Gran Canaria. We were closer to the Sahara for many points in the filming than we were to the Canary Islands, and we're out in the middle of the ocean, and the sea there is very, very deep. It's a volcanic island, Canaria, so, you know, we lost a cage at one point. The wire that was holding the cage snapped, and the cage vanished. It was gone. That was it. It vanished. There was no going down to get it. It was too deep, you know. So that resonated quite healthily with everyone. And then the day that Lewis had to go into the water, that he dives into the water, we had a shark swimming around the boat. And I said to the Spanish crew, you promised me that there are no sharks. I've told the crew there's no sharks down here. And they said, it's not a shark, it's a hammerhead.
Well.
And so they pretended there, I think there was a, you know, slight sardonic wit to what they were saying, but if we were circled by a hammerhead shark for quite some time. We even filmed it, but the trouble is, real sharks are not terribly scary looking things. The you know, the dorsal fin hung and folded. It looked a little like a Timu version of a shark, but it wouldn't go away. It was there for hours, and so I had to talk Louis into going to the water with this shark nearby. And Louis doesn't like the ocean. He doesn't like sharks, but he did it. He dived in and he got out. You know, when we called cut, you've never seen anyone get out of the water so quickly. But it was an adventure, Debbie. And I think that's fun. And I think maybe instinctively I had an idea that the film was going to be an adventure. And I like adventures. I like my heart beating a little quicker than usual at times. You know.
Well, my heart was beating quickly watching the film. So you succeeded on many levels, Jesse. Now, I'm curious, where was the tank? Because I know that you were using services out of New Boyana for part of this film. Were you using a tank at New Boyana?
The tank was in New Boyana, which is in Sofia, Bulgaria. It's I think it's a 30-meter or 25-meter tank. It's really, really modern and fantastic. And the New Boyana stunt team, phenomenal. I just did another film with them, Victor, and Sophia. Zolly is their first AD and production supervisor. And they're just amongst the best in the world I've worked with. We had a really, really sharp, safe, very safety conscious stunt team. They arranged the rigging and the wire work beautifully. And they made it a very, very painless experience. I enjoyed working with them immensely, and I've recommended them over and over because it was a very difficult shoot, and it was a very ambitious schedule that we had to shoot. We had 2 weeks in underwater, and everything underwater takes about 4 or 5 times as long as it does.
Oh, sure. I know James Bamford. He's been shooting at New Boyana for years now, and it's like, I love it, because I think I've gotten to, New Boyana to me is like what MGM used to be. There's everything at New Boyana that a filmmaker could ever want, every kind of set, every kind of street, every kind of accommodation, and I know James loves shooting there, producer Stephen Paul loves shooting there, Rod Lurie loves shooting there, you love shooting there, everybody needs to go to New Boyana.
They're a great bunch, and the studio's run very professionally, and they love filmmaking. There's no cynicism. There's no jaded anger. You know, you run into a lot of the places, and a lot of the local crew are often getting their money halved and percentages taken out, and then when the foreign crew, the American crew disappears, you find, you know, I call back and talk to the local crew, and we never got paid for that last week. We only got half the money, and we're still fighting. Whereas the New Boyana team, they're looked after by their producers, and they realize they're in it for the long game. And so you have a happy crew, you have a happy team, you have happy stunt performers. They know what they're getting into, and it's a job that they're very lucky to have, and they're aware of how fortunate they are, and that makes for really good filmmaking, you know.
And, of course, you would know how to know if a stuntman is happy, having been one yourself for many, many years.
I drive them nuts. I don't think they like me a lot. I like to do things I haven't done before, and I like to push them to the very limit. I rely on them to let me know if it's safe or not, but I will push you to the very limit of what we can do. That's my job, and that's what I need to do, and that's why I'm hired. You know, I'm not hired to come here and, you know, do it as safely as possible. I'm hired here to come and push you and make you think on your toes and use your imagination, you know. So I think I drive them nuts. But, yes, I do know when professionally they're being paid well and they're happy and they're not cynical and they're not thinking about other things. They're there in the moment and working on that, and they're not doing 3 films at once. You know, you get their full attention. These are things that you do run into when you work in a lot of these countries that are having a particular boom because of, you know, tax incentives. They're working so many, and they're so, you know, they're so distracted by what's going on that you can run into issues. You know,
yes.
They don't have any of that.
Now I have to ask you: you're re-teaming with your beloved editor Matthew Lawrence. The two of you have done some beautiful work together, and I have to say, I love the editing on here. There's a great balance of tension that is happening above, in the boat, and below, in the ocean. But in addition to the balance, it's a seamless connection between what's happening with the flow of Burns' drug trafficking and the underwater tension. How much of a challenge was the editing process on this one, Jesse?
It was enormous. It was very, very complex. There's a lot that happened that we had way more going on underwater. Probably another 50% of scenes with sharks underwater. But at some point, we were just informed, you can't have this. We don't have enough money to do the visual effects. You have to cut it down. You have to cut it down to a specific number of shots, and we were somewhere around about 2.5 times as many. So there's some battle and some negotiation, and we ended up having to trim a vast amount down. And I think it helped the story. I think it was good. It forced us to be more inventive. It forced us to focus on the scenes that really mattered. And we lost, you know, we lost those shots, but, you know, it allowed us, you know, allowed the audience. Instead of having 5 subpar shots, you now got 3 that were really good, you know? And so I think it was good. Matthew's very good at that. He's very diplomatic. He has enormous patience with me, and he has self-discipline as a technician, as a craftsman. You know, it takes, to be a craftsman, to build a, you know, cabinet, you can't want to have your results by the end of the day. You have to understand that the results of that cabinet are going to start showing after the first month of woodworking. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that takes discipline. And I don't have that discipline as an editor. I have to leave because I wanted to recut this and get right into that. And then you realize, I'm now working against the flow of the whole scene. So I rely on Matt quite heavily, and I think he's an extraordinary craftsman. And he's an ex-actor. He's just directed his first short. He's going to be directing soon, so I may lose him as an editor. But I understood from the very get-go when he first cut for me that his instincts were always for the performance, and whether the performance worked or not, like me, the script goes out the window, and all he's looking at is what's happening in front of him at that moment, because that's what the audience is going to see, and this is what you need in an editor. And so he would be cutting to the performance, and things would be lost, and dialogue would be lost, and special effects would be lost, and sometimes stunts would be lost. And I'd get angry. I'm like, dude, I spent 2 days setting that up. What's happened? Why is it? And he said, well, watch it, and you'll see it works better without it. And I just sit in complete silence and awe and go, ah, yeah. So now he has an enormous input into the actual script writing process as well. He's involved from that, and he'll say, look, I see what you're doing here, but I don't want to be running into this situation again with you where we're sitting in the edit room and I edit the scene out because it's unnecessary to the movie, Jess. I'm like, ah, you're right. And so we'll take it out of the script, and sure enough, the script runs better and the movie will run better. So it's very, very important to have an editor like Matthew. And he's, as I say, he's there from the script. So he's there before we start filming,
mm-hmm.
Which is important. And actually, my composer is too, Sean Murray. Usually, in this case, it was Maria Bertis, who is very talented. But oftentimes, I'll show them the script ahead of time as well. And I think it helps. It helps make a better movie as opposed to just dropping a finished product in their lap and saying, I need you to come as close as you can to the temp score. Maria, I think, did great this. I hadn't worked with her before, and she was wonderful. She was very patient with me, and I think we worked very well together, and I think the score is good for this.
I love the score, and what I love most about it is it's not intrusive. It's like you think a shark movie, you think Jaws, and you think those keynotes.
It can only be Jaws, Debbie. I don't think you can go near that now, and I think you have to be very, very careful not to sound like you're aping that with anything.
That's it.
Even remotely close to a film that was made in 1978, you cannot do it. It's become part of film folk television lore by this point.
Mm-hmm.
You just look at that film and go, oh my God, this is an amazing film. That's great. Put it over there. Do not let it influence anything I do with this. It's the grand master of this genre. And if you look at Jaws and analyze it on every level, it shouldn't work. The reason it works is because of these extraordinary characters.
Yeah.
You absolutely buy into 100%. You've got a Shakespearean actor, Shakespearean writer, a published author doing, with Robert Shaw. And then you have just phenomenal cast around him, Richard Dreyfuss and Roy Scheider, who are so, so good and at the top of their game. And so you just buy their struggle and what's going on. It becomes this amazing, Greek sort of odyssey, which you love and you buy into. The shark becomes secondary to that, and is more of a malignant figure off camera than it is on. And this is very interesting. And so the one thing you can take away from Jaws is that it's about the characters you have above. It's about the human characters, and if you can make them work, and the audience, is worried about their jeopardy, then you have something. So it was useful in that respect, but you have to be very careful with the music, for sure.
And that's what I love with Maria's score, is that it is very unobtrusive. You don't realize it's there. It's not overpowering anything. It's not standing out on its own. It's like going with the flow, with the current of the water. And...
Yeah.
It's actually a pretty score. It's not bombastic. It's pretty. You like listening to it.
Yeah.
So I think she did an amazing job scoring above and below. Another amazing job in this film, I have to give a shout out for whoever did your blood and scarring makeup. Beautiful job on the blood work. Especially when we have Christina's character gets bit on the leg and those scars that are bloody. They look fantastic. Fantastic.
She was so good. That was the Spanish team. They were very, very good with that. We had a specialist come in and do the corpses as well, and I was doing a wardrobe fitting with Louis, and he had done his laser scan, we knew there was a dummy coming, but none of us had seen it. And we were doing the wardrobe fitting at the hotel. We converted the bottom part of the hotel into a sort of production entity, a space. And we're chattering away. Louis and I have worked together a lot, so we're talking, gossiping about whatever's going on. And he went into the next room to, I think, a pair of jeans in there that he needed to get. He went in the next room, and he was in there. It was a hot 20, 10 minutes went by. And like, Louis, are you okay? And we went in the room and realized that they had laid his dummy onto the table there, and it was so good. It was so unbelievable. It had shocked him, and he was sitting down, and he said, "It looks like my dad. I've had to have a bit of a moment here, because this dummy was absolutely, as lifelike as can be, and it was Lewis, completely torn to pieces, and no arms and legs and guts all hanging out. They did such a good job. It was really, really great to work with them, and it's very, very important in this kind of movie. You don't want to rub people's noses in the limbs and the guts and everything. You've got to do it in a way that feels as authentic as possible and real. The one thing I noticed on all the footage I watched of Shock Attacks is the blood doesn't look like blood. It looks like a white powder.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Maxime, and we, at 1 foot, 2 feet underwater, it's reddish, darkish red. But as you go lower, it turns to a gray color. And as you go really low, the pressure, the depth of the water changes the red to a white kind of creamy looking paste that's coming out. So we tried to match what was realistic as what would have happened in real life. And initially the first cuts, I did have that, but the notes were coming out. Why is the blood white? You're like, well, that's what, yeah. So eventually we ended up having to put a little bit of red into it to satisfy everyone. But it was an interesting experiment and journey into what things actually look like underwater.
But, a shredded Louis Mandalore, that was like to die for. That was so incredible. And all the, all the color drained out of that dummy. I mean, and boy, oh boy, he must have been a lovely lunch for the sharks. Because there was not much left of him when we saw him.
They brought the body back into Madrid. It was wrapped in a ski bag, and I was with them because I was traveling with the team. I was last out with the team. I was in a rush to get me back once we finished filming. We stopped at the customs coming into Madrid. There's a lot of people standing around. Everyone's watching what's going on, and they unzipped this bag, and Lewis's deformed body was in there. And now we filmed with it by that point, so it was pretty rough and tough. The hair was all over the place, but it made it look even worse for some reason. And it was really a traumatic experience, I think, for a lot of people in the airport at that moment. It came out of the bag.
Oh my God.
Well, eyes and
now at the end of the day, everybody's going to get to see Above and Below next week. I'm so excited. I can't wait for them to see it. What did you, because you had some fear, which is what drove you to say yes to this, now that you have conquered your fear and you have completed Above and Below, what did you learn about yourself as a filmmaker that you can now, in making this film, that you can take forward into your future projects?
I think that when you challenge yourself, you're doing yourself the greatest favor at the end of the day, in the long term, in the short term, and everything. If you can continue to challenge yourself to go away from where you're comfortable, to turn away from, what your wheelhouse is, I think it's a good thing. I think you're not haphazard about it. There's a certain safe insurance you can take out, and in this case, it was the fact that these were going to be some very interesting characters. I love interesting characters. I love fully drawn characters that my cast, who are very good, can get their teeth into and really work with. So the fear for me was mitigated by the fact that I knew I had some great collaborators going into But so find yourself some great collaborators and go off into the unknown and make some great movies. That's what I would say to other filmmakers. Don't, if you're known as a horror maker, go off and do something different if you're known as an action guy. You know, but make sure you've got the right collaborators. That's everything.
Well, you blended terror, horror, action, and beauty all in one film, Jesse.
Thank you very much.
As I said, the only word I have for this film is sharktastic. It is phenomenal. I love this movie so much. You know, amazing cast. Production values are extremely high. It looks beautiful. And much as I wanted some people to live, I will always root for the shark. I got to say it.
Yeah. Well, they made it through. One of them didn't, but you know, that's okay.
And that's okay. That's okay. Jesse, I can't thank you enough. This has been beyond a delight and a privilege getting to talk to you. I've waited so long to speak with you because I have admired your work for so long and what you bring us. And now to see this melding so many different elements, including water, 30 meters down, I'm just thrilled. And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you, Debbie. It was a privilege for me to talk to you too. Thank you.
And I hope we get to chat again in the future.
Absolutely. Did I talk over a question? I'm so sorry.
No, not at all. Not at all. No.
I hope we get to talk in the future too. It was a delight, and I think your questions were very observant and on the money, and it's a joy to talk to someone who has done their research. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Jesse. And you go have a great rest of your day, evening, week, as we count down to the release day.
29th of July.
Thanks so much, Jesse. Bye-bye.
Likewise. All the best. Bye-bye.
And that was director Jesse V. Johnson talking all things Above and Below, which you can see this week when it swims into theaters on July 29th. Now, as I said earlier, my review of the sharktastic Above and Below is out now, along with my written interview feature with Jesse. Now, for more new movie shark viewing, make sure to check out The Devil's Mouth, which takes us deep into the underwater rivers and caves of Thailand, and it releases on Prime Video this week, also on the 29th. Really engaging and enlightening interview with cinematographer James Neist on that one, and that is already up on BehindTheLensOnline.net, so make sure to check that out too. And I know this is going to surprise a lot of people. I've posted on socials about it already. But for some campy B-movie shark fun, you do not want to miss the new Water Park Shark. Also streaming on Prime Video. If I didn't know better, I would think that Water Park Shark had been made by the guys over at the Asylum. But it's not dark enough. I don't think there's enough darkness to the story and the action. But it's in that same kind of vein. It's just fun. Stupid and fun. I mean, how can you say no to a film shot in a water park with sharks swimming down water slides? You can't. You gotta see it. And my review of that fun bit of chum will be out this week. And of course, don't pass up Rennie Harlan's Deep Water, a disaster film personified with plane crashes and sharks. And that's currently streaming in the U.S. on major platforms and available on demand, as well as on DVD and Blu-ray. And it's opening in various markets overseas right now, too. So make sure to check out some of the sharktastic programming on Discovery Channel this week, and also some of Nat Geo's Sharkfest documentaries that are peppered throughout its programming schedule. Now, that's all the time we have today. Don't forget to check out BehindTheLensOnline.net for more reviews and interviews, including my review of Above and Below and written interview feature on Jesse Johnson. So, have a sharktastic Shark Week. And until next week, I'm Debbie Elias. This is Behind the Lens.